Chapter 12. Pronounced dreamily. Andy alone survived? He sat down. S. It was a terrible misfortune for me. Everything went wrong. All the men went wrong. I survived. Remembering the things one reads of, it was difficult to realize the true meaning of his answers. I ought to have seen it once, but I did not. So difficult is it for our minds, remembering so much, instructed so much, informed of so much, to get in touch with the real actuality at our elbow. And with my head full of preconceived notions as to how a case of anabolism and suffering at sea should be managed, I said, "Who were then so lucky in the drawing of lots?" "Drawing of lots?" he said. "Had lots? Do you think I would have allowed my life to go for the drawing of lots?" Not if he could help if, I perceived, no matter what other life went. It was a great misfortune. Terrible. Awful, he said. Any heads went wrong, but the best men would live. The toughest, you mean, I said. He considered the word. Perhaps it was strange to him, though his English was so good. Yes, he asserted at last. He best. It was everybody for himself at last, and the ship open to all. Thus from question to question I got the whole story. I fancy it was the only way I could that night have stood by him. Outwardly at least he was himself again. The first sign of it was the return of that incongruous trick he had of drawing both his hands down his face, and it had its meaning now, with that slight shudder of the frame, and the passionate anguish of these hands uncovering a hungry immovable face, the wide pupils of the intent, silent, fascinating eyes. It was an iron steamer of a most respectable origin. The burgomaster of Fox's native town had built her. She was the first steamer ever launched there. The burgomaster's daughter had christened her. Country people drove in carts from miles around to see her. He told me all this. He got the berth as what we should call a chief mate. He seemed to think it had been a feather in his cap. And, in his own corner of the world, this lover of life was of good parentage. The burgomaster had advanced ideas in the ship-owning line. At that time not everyone would have known enough to think of dispatching a cargo steamer to the Pacific. But he loaded her with pitched pine deals, and sent her off to hunt for her luck. Wellington was to be the first port, I fancy. It doesn't matter, because in latitude 44 degrees south, and somewhere halfway between Good Hope and New Zealand, the tail shaft broke, and the propeller dropped off. They were steaming then with a fresh gale on the quarter and all their canvas set, to help the engines. But by itself the sail power was not enough to keep way on her. When the propeller went, the ship broached to at once, and the masts got whipped overboard. The disadvantage of being dismasted consisted in this, that they had nothing to hoist flags on to make themselves visible at a distance. In the course of the first few days several ships failed to sight them, and the gale was drifting them out of the usual track. The voyage had been, from the first, neither very successful nor very harmonious. There had been quarrels on board. The captain was a clever, melancholic man, who had no unusual grip on his crew. The ship had been amply provisioned for the passage, but, somehow or other, several barrels of meat were found spoiled on opening, and had been thrown overboard soon after leaving home, as a sanitary measure. Afterwards the crew of the Borgmester Dahl thought of that rotten carrion with tears of regret, covetousness and despair. She drove south. To begin with, there had been an appearance of organization, but soon the bonds of discipline became relaxed. A somber idleness succeeded. They looked with sullen eyes at the horizon. The gales increased. She lay in the trough, the seas made a clean breach over her. On one frightful night, when they expected their hulk to turn over with them every moment, a heavy sea broke on board, deluged the storerooms, and spoiled the best part of the remaining provisions. It seems the hatch had not been properly secured. This instance of neglect is characteristic of utter discouragement. Falk tried to inspire some energy into his captain, but failed. From that time he retired more into himself, always trying to do his utmost in the situation. It grew worse. Gale succeeded gale, with black mountains of water hurling themselves on the Borgmaster Dahl. Some of the men never left their bunks. Many became quarrelsome. The chief engineer, an old man, refused to speak at all to anybody. Others shut themselves up in their berths to cry. On calm days the inert steamer rolled on a leaden sea under a murky sky, or showed, in sunshine, the squalor of sea waves, the dried white salt, the rust, the jagged broken places. Then the gales came again. They kept body and soul together on short rations. Once, an English ship, scudding in a storm, tried to stand by them, heaving too pluckily under their lee. The sea swept her decks. The men in oilskins clinging to her rigging looked at them, and they made de pirate signs over their shattered bulwarks. Suddenly her main topsail went, yard and all, in a terrific squall, as he had to bear up under bare poles, and disappeared. Other ships had spoken them before, but at first they had refused to be taken off, expecting the assistance of some steamer. There were very few steamers in those latitudes then, and when they desired to leave this dead and drifting carcass, no ship came in sight. They had drifted south out of men's knowledge. They failed to attract the attention of a lonely whaler, and very soon the edge of the polar ice cap rose from the sea, and closed the southern horizon like a wall. One morning they were alarmed, by finding themselves floating amongst detached pieces of ice. But the fear of sinking passed away like their vigor, like their hopes. The shocks of the floes knocking against the ship's side could not rouse them from their apathy. And the Borgmaster Dahl drifted out again unharmed into open water. They hardly noticed the change. The funnel had gone overboard in one of the heavy rolls. Two of their three boats had disappeared, washed away in bad weather, and the davits swung to and fro, unsecured, with chafed ropes ends waggling to the roll. Nothing was done on board, and Falk told me how he had often listened to the water washing about the dark engine room where the engines, stilled forever, were decaying slowly into a mass of rust, as the stilled heart decays within the lifeless body. At first, after the loss of the motive power, the tiller had been thoroughly secured by lashings. But in course of time these had rotted, chafed, rusted, parting one by one. And the rudder, freed, banged heavily to and fro night and day, sending dull shocks through the whole frame of the vessel. This was dangerous. Nobody cared enough to lift a little finger. He told me that even now sometimes waking up at night, he fancied he could hear the dull vibrating thuds. The pintles carried away, and it dropped off at last. The final catastrophe came with the sending off of their one remaining boat. It was Falk who had managed to preserve her intact, and now it was agreed that some of the hands should sail away into the track of the shipping to procure assistance. She was provisioned with all the food they could spare for the six who were to go. They waited for a fine day. It was long in coming. At last one morning they lowered her into the water. Directly, in that demoralized crowd, trouble broke out. Two men who had no business there had jumped into the boat under the pretense of unhooking the tackles, while some sort of squabble arose on the deck amongst these weak, tottering specters of a ship's company. The captain, who had been for days living secluded, and unapproachable in the chart room, came to the rail. He ordered the two men to come up on board and menaced them with his revolver. They pretended to obey, but suddenly cutting the boat's painter, gave a shove against the ship's side, and made ready to hoist the sail. "Shoot, sir! Shoot them down!" cried Falk, "and I will jump overboard to regain the boat." But the captain, after taking aim with an irresolute arm, turned suddenly away. A howl of rage arose. Falk dashed into his cabin for his own pistol. When he returned it was too late. Two more men had leaped into the water, but the fellows in the boat beat them off with the oars, hoisted the boat's lug and sailed away. They were never heard of again. Consternation and despair possessed the remaining ship's company, till the apathy of utter hopelessness reasserted its sway. That day a fireman committed suicide, running up on deck with his throat cut from ear to ear, to the horror of all hands. He was thrown overboard. The captain had locked himself in the chart room, and Falk, knocking vainly for admittance, heard him reciting over and over again the names of his wife and children, not as if calling upon them, or commending them to God, but in a mechanical voice like an exercise of memory. Next day the doors of the chart room were swinging open to the roll of the ship, and the captain had disappeared. He must during the night have jumped into the sea. Falk locked both the doors, and kept the keys. The organized life of the ship had come to an end. The solidarity of the men had gone. They became indifferent to each other. It was Falk who took in hand the distribution of such food as remained. They boiled their boots for soup, to eke out the rations, which only made their hunger more intolerable. Sometimes whispers of hate were heard passing between the languid skeletons that drifted endlessly to and fro, north and south, east and west, upon that carcass of a ship. And in this lies the grotesque horror of this sombre story. The last extremity of sailors, overtaking a small boat or a frail craft, seems easier to bear, because of the direct danger of the seas. The confined space, the close contact, the imminent menace of the waves, seem to draw men together, in spite of madness, suffering and despair. But there was a ship safe, convenient, roomy. A ship with beds, bedding, knives, forks, comfortable cabins, glass and china, and a complete cook's galley, pervaded, ruled, and possessed by the pitiless specter of starvation. The lamp oil had been drunk, the wicks cut up for food, the candles eaten. At night she floated dark in all her recesses, and full of fears. One day Falk came upon a man gnawing a splinter of pine wood. Suddenly he threw the piece of wood away, tottered to the rail, and fell over. Falk, too late to prevent the act, saw him claw the ship's side desperately, before he went down. Next day another man did the same thing, after uttering horrible imprecations. But this one somehow managed to get hold of the broken rudder chains and hung on there, silently. Falk set about trying to save him, and all the time the man, holding with both hands, looked at him anxiously with his sunken eyes. Then, just as Falk was ready to put his hand on him, the man let go his hold, and sank like a stone. Falk reflected on these sights. His heart revolted against the horror of death, and he said to himself that he would struggle for every precise minute of his life. One afternoon as the survivors lay about on the after-deck, the carpenter, a tall man with a black beard, spoke of the last sacrifice. There was nothing eatable left on board. Nobody said a word to this. But that company separated quickly, these listless feeble specters slunk off one by one, to hide in fear of each other. Falk and the carpenter remained on deck together. Falk liked the big carpenter. He had been the best man of the lot, helpful and ready, as long as there was anything to do, the longest hopeful, and had preserved to the last some vigor and decision of mind. They did not speak to each other. Henceforth no voices were to be heard conversing sadly on board that ship. After a time the carpenter tottered away forward, but later on, Falk going to drink at the freshwater pump, had the inspiration to turn his head. The carpenter had stolen upon him from behind, and, summoning all his strength, was aiming with a crowbar a blow at the back of his skull. Dodging just in time, Falk made his escape, and ran into his cabin. While he was loading his revolver there, he heard the sound of heavy blows struck upon the bridge. The locks of the chart room doors were slight, they flew open, and the carpenter, possessing himself of the captain's revolver, fired a shot of defiance. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.